This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. All the traditional signs point to an improving economy. Unemployment down, U.S. car and truck sales up, consumer sentiment indices are up. Why is it, though, that many of us aren't feeling like happy days are here again? Detroit Free Press columnist Tom Walsh dug into that very question for a recent story. Tom, it's perplexing. You look around the world and you see the U.S. economy is head and shoulders above so many other nations. And yet, as you put it so well in your story for the Free Press, there's a nagging anxiety that things are not improving for most people. What's fueling that?
Well, I think the biggest part of it is that we've seen for the better part of 40 years wage stagnation in the middle class and below. All of the data shows that whatever top percent you want to point to, the top 1%, the 3%, 10%, are reaping the lion's share of the gains from an economy that unquestionably has improved since 2009. Maybe not at a rocket pace, but it's gone pretty well. But a lot of people haven't seen that in their paychecks.
In fact, I really thought that the quote you used in your piece, you spoke with Lou Glaser of the Michigan Future Think Tank, and his quote was, "The metrics that define a good economy for a lot of people are getting trumped with, I haven't had a raise in 10 years.
Exactly, and that's the issue. And his point is that this is largely a technology issue, that we have technology that has not only taken over many of the jobs that we traditionally thought of as muscle jobs, factory jobs, physical labor. Robots have replaced a lot of that. An auto plant that might have once had 4,000 or 5,000 employees can now be run with 800 or 1,000. We know that. But now the technology is taking over what are commonly thought of as knowledge jobs or brain jobs. And that's a new phenomenon that we haven't totally come to grips with.
And you kind of do give us a great reality check by resurrecting something that I kind of had forgotten about from the Reagan era, the misery index, where you add the U.S. jobless rate and our inflation rate. And when you compare where a misery index was, let's say, when President Obama first came to the White House and where we are today, we should feel a lot better than I think many of us do.
Well, exactly. The unemployment rate is down now. You know, my email as a result of that column has all kinds of people saying, well, it's people have stopped looking for work and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there are a lot of people who don't like this president or, you know, who are firmly entrenched in one ideological camp or another who say, well, the numbers don't mean anything. The reality is the numbers have been calculated pretty much the same way for a long time, and they're just moving targets is what they are. And so unemployment is down, but income rates have not gone up except a little bit briefly, and you're seeing that in the consumer sentiment numbers, which are better than they have been in quite some time. So you've got this mix of numbers, but what we do have that we certainly didn't have in the Jimmy Carter era when Ronald Reagan had seized upon the misery index, is runaway inflation. Inflation is basically at zero now, has been very low for a very long time, and so that even though people aren't getting raises, it's not killing them the way it would if inflation were rampaging at 10 or 12%.
But what we do see, I think, from 2015 that I gather was not the case in the Jimmy Carter and Reagan years is this prosperity gap. When you tell us in your piece in the Free Press, Tom Walsh, that the top 10% are taking home 49.9% of all income earned by Americans. Kind of reading that, you kind of stop and go, you know, that sounds like the kind of dynamics that a few centuries ago saw Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette hauled off to the guillotine. Kind of breeds resentment.
Well, I think that's right. And I think you've even heard some billionaires express concern that that's not a sustainable trend, that at some point you're going to pay a price for that. And I think that, you know, that kind of talk certainly was fueling the Occupy movement in the immediate wake of the Great Recession and the fact that, you know, none of the big bankers went to jail or anything for almost ruining the economy. So you had that dust up for a while. And then I think, I mean, even though, you know, the headlines have been about police behavior in Ferguson or Baltimore, I think the response to a lot of that is from corners of the population where people think they're getting a raw deal on in a lot of ways. And I think that's all, you know, all part and parcel of, you know, there is a simmering frustration, resentment around in the land. And at some point, it does hold potential for backlash.
And as you point out, we've even got some Republican presidential candidates talking more like Democrats, with kind of attention being paid to income inequality. Is anyone coming up with solutions and solid ideas for ways to narrow the prosperity gap and change this unsustainable dynamic?
Well, that's the problem. A lot of people are thinking about it. There are some people talking about it. But as Lou Glaser said in my piece, his sense is that, you know, the nation as a whole, and Michigan in particular, the politicians of both parties seem to be talking about, you know, how do we improve a 20th century economy when we're in an economy that just behaves very differently? So, you know, does raising the minimum wage do very much? I don't know, and I don't know how much government can do. Some people will tell you the government, whether you're the president or the governor or the mayor, there are really limits on what you can do in the wake of severe economic cycles or dislocations, and we're in the middle of one right now, you know, with what's going on in Europe with Greece and fears of, you know, kind of a Chinese stock market bubble bursting. So, you know, you've got all that going on, and in some ways that helps the United States and sends the message that, oh, gee, the money that was invested in China or Europe is now coming to the U.S. as kind of a safe haven, so our stock market hasn't been beaten up as bad as some of the others. But there's still a lot of jitteriness out there in the world.
That's indeed true. Detroit Free Press columnist Tom Walsh, always a pleasure talking with you. Tom, thank you so much.
Take care, Cindy. Thanks.
And if you miss the show on the radio, you can easily catch us on iTunes. Search for Stateside with Cynthia Canty. And while you're there, give us a review. We'd love to hear what you think.